Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 3130. That's 3130. And tonight we're going to have a really, really good guest on. Her name is Jory Nunes, and she's from Modesto, California. And she's a child abuse survivor and author who says, I grew up extremely neglected, like so many of us have. And she's going to go into her own story and tell us what happened from the beginning of her abuse as she remembers it, and go on from there. And so if you want to call tonight, if you have a mother issue, I have a mother issue. She's got one, too. I mean, she had one. But anyway, the telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Now, before we get started, I am going to read the mission statement. We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. And it does. It's not just in our country. It's everywhere. Offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, those last three things that I just said, prevention, intervention, and recovery. Many times I'll do a topic on each one, prevention and intervention and recovery. Because that's what it's all about, you know, with prevention, if we could just learn to work together as neighborhoods and community, society, and if we see something, say something like we always talk about, because that is so important. And there are some states, and I know Florida was one of them, that was going to, and I don't know if this bill got passed or not, I'm going to look into it, but if you knew somebody was being abused down the street and you don't report it, and they find that out, that you knew, okay, you can get fined heavily, okay, because they're hoping that people will come forward and report, okay, that's what it's all about. And then we have intervention, and that is learning how to speak to your children properly about child abuse. We do not live in an innocent world, so therefore we should, you know, help our children to understand that in a proper way, age appropriate. And then, of course, recovery, how we as survivors recover. Now, you can find all this information on prevention, intervention, and recovery right on our NASCA website. I use it a lot. I've done a lot of presentations. A lot of times I'll just pick things off of the website, and I had used that. So anyway, that's NASCA.org, NASCA.org. Okay, we have somebody else. Oh, Mrs. Bill, and it says he's working. Okay. So we will get on with the story then, and then I'll call on Bill every once in a while. But, Jory, why don't you go ahead and start telling us your story? Go ahead.
Hi. Okay, well, thank you for the people who are listening. And I want to say that life was grand I just really never thought about my past sexual abuse or neglect in my early adult ages, stages. I think I've just blocked it out and became a real estate agent, and then later became a real estate broker, and had, you know, 3 children, and life was good. And then one day, Pandora's box opened for me when my father-in-law unexpectedly pushed himself up against me and tried to kiss me sexually in a sexual manner. And it freaked me out, and I totally just was not expecting that. And it terrified me, and my husband didn't believe me when I told him, and his other people in his family, some did believe me, some didn't, but I actually had a nervous breakdown, and I couldn't handle it mentally. I was like, and it actually made me remember everything that happened in my childhood, which I kind of tucked away in a box and didn't want to think about forever. And I'm sorry if you hear a lot of noise. I have 2 dogs which bark at every little thing, and I have construction. I'm getting my house remodeled, so there's lots of noise in my house. So, but anyway, so I freaked out. I went berserk, and I wrote this bizarre, crazy, insane, twisted book called Chocolate Flowers. And even though it was insanely crazy, it was insanely healing. And I was able to dig up some childhood trauma that I didn't want to deal with and say it was about a girl named Jennifer, who was the main character in the book. And I was able to say it was her, not me. And she went through this, not me. It's fiction, not my life. Yeah, right. So anyways, after the book published, I had gone on Dr. Phil, and they had told me if they would allow me to remove a restraining order against my stepbrother, who's like 12 or 14 years younger than me or something, I don't even know. We weren't even raised together. We have a different dad. But if they allowed me to remove a restraining order against him, which I had because he was psychotically aggressive and threatening my family because I wrote this book, big deal. So who, you know, if it wasn't true, why would anybody even care? So Dr. Phil's staff actually removed the restraining order and promised me that when we went on the show, they were going to do an intervention on my brother and get him some help he desperately needed for his addictions. And I was extremely grateful, and they said they would talk about my healing journey from writing my book, and I agreed to it, and I went on Dr. Phil, and they never did an intervention, but they did call the show My Sister Wrote a Book of Lies, and they made me look like a complete absolute lunatic, to say
really?
The nicest way.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
Yes.
Sorry.
They had me have professional dressers, and they put a girdle on me, the tight, sexy dress. I was like, why am I wearing this? I don't dress like this normally. A wig. They put fake eyelashes on me, gobs of makeup. I don't even wear makeup. You know, and it was like, whoa, I look like a prostitute, but a beautiful prostitute. You know, I don't look like this. But okay, whatever, you know. And then they made it sound like I was this promiscuous, horrific sister to my brother and my hurting my family by writing this book.
Strange. Well, I was thinking about going on Dr. Phil, and they had been in touch with me because my book made it to Japan and all kinds of things. And
yeah.
I turned him down. Boy, am I glad I did now. After hearing that, I don't know what he would have made me.
Oh, it was horrible. It created me, it created my mind to go into a complete depression and back into my introverted world of not wanting to talk about the abuse and saying, okay, yes, in fact, it was me. And it was very difficult to talk about it again because he had just basically called me a liar, even though I have medical records all my life that say I had sexual abuse scars internally from my father. It didn't say from my father. They couldn't prove it was him. They just said sexual abuse scars, you know, tissue, because I had a reconstruction surgery when I was little. So, you know, that was very difficult.
Well, let's get to your story here. Okay, I'm going to help you out here. It says, I don't ever recall ever being loved appropriately. Now, that means that your mother wasn't loving to you. She didn't say she loved you and all that stuff. I went through that too. Go ahead.
She was diagnosed with multiple personality disorder, and they actually diagnosed her in San Francisco in the early 80s, late 70s maybe. And she was diagnosed with 8 personalities and one being dark. The one that was dark, she knew that she was sexually abusive, and she knew that that wasn't right. And she always said, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. This other personality just did it. I have no control over it. It wasn't anything to do with me. You know, once she was getting therapy and medicated for it, she did talk about it to me. But she used to, when I was young, she used to masturbate in the bathtub and make me and my sister, and I don't want to speak for my sister because she doesn't like to, you know, be involved. Even though we privately talk about it, she doesn't want, you know, me to say how she feels or whatever. But my mom would make us, like, wash her back and stuff. And then she would tell us that we had to learn how to be promiscuous because, well, me anyway, because she felt like I was so homely that if I ever wanted to get a man to marry me, I needed to be very good in bed. So she would make me watch pornographic movies back in the day with VHS tapes. Specifically, I remember Deep Throat.
Yeah, I do too. Right.
Ew. Yeah. So, you know, it makes me sick. And especially when my kids became the age I was, I think, holy cow, I was a baby. And she's making me watch these things. And she used to tell me, like, to avoid getting raped, just have sex with whoever, because that way you won't be raped and it'll just be over faster.
Well, she was
just really
sick.
Bad.
Yeah.
She was very, 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 very sick. Yes.
Yeah.
And it took me decades to understand her disability and that she was sick in the head, and it wasn't my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. It took a long time to get to that point.
Absolutely. We look to our parents, you know, for nurturing and love and teaching us boundaries that are proper boundaries and all that other stuff that we know that they should be doing. And yet some of us, many of us, not just some of us, more and more people are coming out. You know, there's a lot of incest in families. And at one time that was a very dirty word, right? Incest, right? It's still dirty, don't get me wrong. But at least people are talking about it. At least they're talking about it. And then you have mothers or fathers who are mentally ill. They're terrible narcissists and they're all kinds of stuff. And, you know, they destroy the family. It's what they do. And if you come out alive from it a lot of times, or like in one part of your bio here, you felt like you, in fact, you did try to kill her at one point. But let's not go there.
Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah,
there.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, I don't mean to laugh. That's like a nervous laugh. I don't find it funny at all. But
Me. Let me say something. I can tell that you're nervous, okay? And a lot of people are when they come on the show. Just take a deep breath. You're with Carol Mouth, as they call me, all right? You know, and by the time you tell your story, you're going to feel better, and you're not going to have that uptight feeling that you have right now, okay, because I'm sort of like a clown and all this other stuff. I'm also down to business, don't get me wrong. But I know what it's like to have that a little bit of panic, a little bit of panic there. Let me ask you, before we get more into your story, how are you doing in school? Let's start there.
School.
Were you able to concentrate? Yeah.
No, as a matter of fact, I didn't concentrate at all, and I didn't even know what grade I was in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I got lost going to classes, and mm-hmm. I even had a teacher during my elementary years that would come to my home, pick me up, walk me to school because I'd get lost around the corner, and I would get a special attention from, like, the cafeteria ladies. They all saw I never had lunches and stuff, so they always gave me, you know, they ended up letting me sell milk on the side of the stage when I was a kid. You know, it's 10 cents for a little thing of milk back way back in the, you know, prehistoric days.
Right.
But they used to say I was working for my meal, so they made me feel like I was earning my free meal by working. And I was always in special ed classes, and I never really learned how to read until I was in foster care when I was 14. Sorry, guys, stop it. Until when I was like 14,
okay.
My foster mom taught me how to read.
Well, thank God.
But I always had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what? She was a Mormon, and she used to take the Bible and read it to me, and then draw pictures and stuff, and basically she would, like, make me understand words and phrases and things by drawing pictures. And that's how I learned how to do real estate. I would draw pictures of things and write them out a million times and highlight, and, you know, I mean, it was very, I struggled to learn real estate, but.
Right. But at least you did, though.
I did not graduate from high school. I was a dropout.
No. A lot of people are, you know, and then they get their GED later on. I did that.
Yeah.
I had hood kids after me, kids from Brooklyn. I said, oh, no. I was born in New York, too, honey, but they were tougher than me. And I knew that there was a bad thing going on because they ran the school. So I decided a bunch of my friends, we just all took a walk and got the heck out of there. And I didn't care because I just went and took my GED. And I was glad that I did it. I am not sorry that I did it, okay, because I would have been in many fights, okay?
Right.
I was already down in detention a lot of times. But it was, you know, protecting myself. Well, I was protecting myself from these people, you know. So, but anyway.
See, and I was the opposite. I was a school bully. I used to beat people up, and they were afraid of me because I was so mean. But I was just, I was horrible. I mean, I tormented people. I was the worst bully. I was so mean. As a matter of fact, I'm friends now with someone on Facebook that I totally, completely humiliated all through my school years. And I wrote him a very long letter and sent it to a mutual friend to get his address and mail it to him. And it was telling him that I had been so sexually abused and neglected that I had mental health issues. And that's why I was so cruel to him. And that now, I used to call him Baby Huey. But now I have a son who looks just like him. It's so weird. And he acts like a Baby Huey. He's real clumsy and chubby and everything. And I think I would kill someone if they abused my son the way I abused that guy. And God has a really strange way of making things come full circle. And it was incredible for me to, you know, have a child that is just like this kid named Jeff I used to tease and call Baby Huey. And now I got to see it from his perspective through my son. And I thought, oh, it just breaks my heart, you know, that I was so mean to this one particular kid. Whew.
Well, you know, that happens, though. That many times happens, Sori. I don't want you to feel bad about this, okay? Because quite frankly, when kids are so abused at home, I mean, I had the home issue and I had the school issue, and I just said, screw it, I'm getting out of there. And I got my education much later on. That's okay. We're survivors. And what we have to do is, you know, for the moment, do what we have to do. Now, when you're bullied and turned into a bully, I should say, I always tell people, because I work social services, I did for years, I always say, look inside of the house. Don't just judge the kid and the kid's actions. Go inside of the house. because that's where you're going to find a lot of questions, you know, or answers to your questions. Look inside there. Because when a child is growing up in such an atmosphere, they call it environmental conditioning. Okay, I use that word, that phrase, because that's what it is. And, you know, if it becomes normal after a while. If you're bullied at home, you're sexually abused, you're punched around, all this stuff the kids can go through, then many times you do take it out on the street. You just do, all right?
Well,
so, you know,
the one thing that I learned early on was that people knew I was being abused, but they couldn't pinpoint it because I never had bruises. No one ever spanked me. No one ever hit me. I was never hit or abused that way. And so people couldn't figure it out because they would constantly say, is your mom hitting you? Does your dad hit you? You know, they never said anything about my vagina. You know, they just basically would be like, do you have any bruises? Do you have any, you know, broken part, but have you ever been hurt? They never ask the appropriate, correct questions, you know, for me to say, well, yeah, because to me, that was all normal.
Well, that's it. I just said that, normal. And
yeah.
But you see, today, you know, they have gotten better a lot in social services to the point we know that it's behavioral. A lot of times when kids act out, I call it act out. You know, there's a reason for it, and it can be sexual. Today, they look at it, at least. Back then in the day, no, they didn't look at it for sexual abuse. And but today we know all of the – we have the signs right on our website of sexual abuse. And one of the things, you know, that is the acting out, you know, the behavioral problems. And then also, too, if kids become very promiscuous or if they become, you know, they say come out with words that they shouldn't even know yet, okay, about sex, you know, things like that.
True.
Then you can say, well, let's look at that part of the household. Let's see if that's part of the issue, okay? And so today it has gotten a little bit better. It still has a ways to go, all right? It has a ways to go.
Well, and I also started doing, like, CASA training.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is when you go to court with a child who's been possibly sexually abused and you kind of are their person they lean on. And when I went through that training, I found it really difficult, you know, and triggering because they had said things like a lot of adults are mandatory reporters, but the biggest mistake people make is that they tell the person, before you tell me you're being abused, I need to tell you I have to turn it in because I'm a mandatory reporter. And that is the biggest no. You are not supposed to do that. You just listen and report it and do not say anything to scare the child because kids don't talk because they're so afraid. Oh, you're going to turn me in to the police? I mean, that's not why I'm coming to you.
Right.
And that's
right,
to me,
that's
you know, it's very upsetting because people don't realize that when just because you're a mandatory reporter doesn't mean you have to mandatory tell the child that you're going to report it.
That's right. And, you know, that's like a part of our mission statement right there, the intervention part. People have to learn, you know, whether they've taken courses like you have. And I took them, you know, a long time ago. But the point is, anyone, if you're going to sit down with a kid, you get to know the kid a little bit. Maybe you already know the kid a little bit, right? And you learn the proper way of speaking to them, the right questions. Otherwise, that kid's going to bolt, okay? They're going to take off because they're scared. Because, oh, my God, they're scared for two reasons. Did I do something wrong? You know, they think, oh, no, she's going to turn me in or turn my family in. Did I do something wrong? Or they'll, just because they're so afraid of their family, they might bolt on that, you know, reason, take off, you know. So, you know, people have to understand the right way of prevention, intervention, and recovery. Otherwise, if they don't with the intervention, they're going to scare the heck out of the kid, or the kid will go silent. Now, you're talking about behavior that you had in school. Where kids were, you know, you became a bully and volatile and all this other stuff. Well, you know, a lot of people, a lot of kids do that. I want you to know that. And I wasn't any saint, okay? That's why I was in detention all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it was like, hey, this person wants to do this and do that to me, so I've got to protect myself, you know? So I did do that. But I was the one that went to detention, all right? That's what made me mad. But anyway, now, what about your father? It says, my father was absent, but when I did see him, I was a nervous wreck, praying that he would not touch me. Did you tell anyone about your father's behavior with you?
Never, but my mother knew. She and him worked out a deal that if he was going to take me on visits when I was very young, when they were divorcing, that I had to sleep in a sleeping bag because he only had one bed in his house, and I don't know why they never thought of putting me on the couch. But they used to have me sleep in a sleeping bag in the bed with him.
Oh, yeah. So,
and that was supposed to be to remind him not to touch me.
Oh, okay. Now you just answered my question there. Okay. Well, you grew up in a very bad environment, okay?
And, very, yeah.
Very bad. And a lot of us have. A lot of us have. And I had mother issues too. There was one point where I had been out one night, and it was awful scene that happened. I'm not going to go into it because this is your story night. But when I came home.
No, I don't have a problem. You go ahead.
No, this is how we run the show, though. But when I came home, my house was full of guns, and I felt like picking up a gun and shooting my mother. So I know what it's like to, you know, because she was just so mean and cruel and so uncaring.
Yeah.
And so when you have a mother like that, the mother is supposed to nurture. Again, we look to mommy to nurturing. But let me tell you something. It's just a title. It's just a title. Like I said last night, it's a title. And it doesn't mean you're going to be a good mother. All right? So tell me how you got over, you know, you had this horrific resentment and hatred towards your mother. This is interesting. You know, how did you get over that? How did the feelings of hatred that you...
Well, this is really bizarre, and some people don't believe it, but after she died, I had a dream that she showed up and was sitting on the end of my bed. And it was like I was awake, and she was beautiful. She looked absolutely perfect, and she was wearing this really ugly mauve sweatsuit that I used to wear all the time when I was a teenager, and I forgot I owned until I saw her wearing it. And she said, I just was wearing this so you would remember that this is real and that this is the size I am. She goes, remember how perfect you were, your figure, when you wore this? She goes, I'm perfect, and heaven is the most amazing place. You can't even describe in words how beautiful it is and how perfect everyone becomes. She said, I am no longer that person who raised you. I am clean. I am healed. I am perfect, and life is so much more beautiful when you pass, and you understand things more. And she said, all these other things that I don't really remember right now, but I kept saying, Mom, I'm tired. Can you please leave? I mean, thanks. I'm glad you're healed. Good for you. But I'm tired. I can't sleep. I need my sleep. And I kept doing that to her. And I don't know if it's because she kept talking or what, but I remember like waking up thinking, was that real or was that not real? And why was she wearing something that I forgot I even owned?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird? So I don't know if it was like a delusion or if it really happened, but it made me think she's okay now. She's healed. She's she understands what she did, and it's okay.
Well, I think, you know, that I believe in God, okay? I was the only one in my family did that. They were like a bunch of atheists on the one side, on my mother's side, and except for my cousins. They believed in God, too. In fact, I had a minister cousin. Part of the family was Catholic. Part of it was, you know, Protestant. It was really weird. But anyway, the point is, I believed, I don't think I'd be alive if it wasn't for God being in my life. I honestly believe that. And I had an out-of-body experience once that scared the daylights out of me. And, see, I think things can happen. And with me, I was being a tough kid. Yeah, I was. Because either we implode or we explode. You know what I'm saying? Either we're inward.
Yeah.
You know, or we're too outward. You know, you never know how you're going to turn out. And I turned into doing things that I shouldn't have done. Now, I say it to God when I'm telling you this, and I think it's good for people to hear. I was just laying on the couch. I had two children already. I had left my husband. He was a nasty alcoholic and a gambler. And he totally didn't take care of us, and he wouldn't let me work because he said the guys would look at me. Cute. I had no car. There was no way that I could work, all right? So, but anyway, I left him finally, and it took me a couple times to really mean it. And so anyway, I didn't want to go back home because I didn't like my mother. She was awful. And I didn't have any money, so I had to go back to him. And that's never a fix, okay, because people don't really change. They can change if they want to change themselves. But that's the key right there. He didn't want to change. He was an alcoholic, and he was also a vicious alcoholic, and he was also a gambler. So anyway, I managed to get an apartment. I had money because a grandmother of mine had passed away, and she left me some money. So I took off. I took my kids, had the church's blessings, Catholic church, no less. And they said, Carol, go live your life, because that's what God wants you to do. You want to put on this life to be tortured. And I thanked them both profusely, and I went my way. Now, I'm laying on the couch, the kids are in bed, and I'm just laying there, and I used to love murder mystery stories. And I'm in the middle of a sentence, not the least bit tired. I'm a night owl. I've always been a night owl. This is, we're talking about 8 o'clock at night, all right? I'm reading a book. And all of a sudden, I felt the insides of my body, I don't know how else to explain this, like go up towards the ceiling without touching it, all right? And I heard two voices. One voice said, really, really nasty, what the hell is she doing here? Oops. And the other voice said, the other voice, I couldn't understand. It was muffled. I couldn't understand. And then I felt myself go back into my body. Well, let me tell you something. That was like a wake-up call to me. I think that because of my own behavior, I was maybe going to go to hell or something if I died. You know what I'm saying? So that's the way I took it, that dream, all right? That whatever the hell it was, it wasn't even a dream. It was just something that happened because I wasn't sleeping. So I got off the couch, and I smoked a lot of cigarettes in those days. I went through a whole pack and already had close to a pack that day. I mean, I just kept smoking because I was so scared. I mean, what a thing to happen, okay?
Yeah.
That was weird. And for years, I didn't tell anyone about it. I figured they'd think I was crazy. And then years later, I joined a prayer group because they pulled me in off the street and said, you're a mess. And I said, yes, I am. And they straightened my ass out. Well, I'm going to tell you right now. They were good for me. But I told them about it. And they said, Carol, you were on the wrong path. Yes, you came from sexual abuse. You came from being beaten. You came from being starved. You came from not having enough clothing. I had to go out and steal it. By the way, I came from a wealthy family. All right? I was a black sheep. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the things they
did they treat your siblings like that?
I was the only one that they treated like that. But I found out years later, my mother had gotten raped. And 9 months later, out I popped. And so I think every time she looked at me, she hated me. And she told me we'd never be friends. So I just went berserk, okay? So you're talking about being a bully or all this other stuff that you went through in school. And you were lashing out. And I was lashing out in my own way also. I got in with really bad people, which I'm not going to talk about on air. All right, and I was doing all kinds of bad things. And so this is what kids do. You see, this is child abuse. What you went through was horrific child abuse. What I went through was horrific child abuse. And all the people on NASCA, you know, went through terrible abuses. So, and we all react about the same or a little bit different. Like I said, some people become very, very inward, and other people are very, very, you know, outward. That's just the way it is, you know.
So I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Why can we only remember the abusive times and not any good times? Is there something that because I don't think I even had any good times. I mean, I can't remember anything good.
Mm-hmm. I struggle even to this day to look back on my life because I had two abusive marriages too after that. I didn't know how to choose. See, this is another way it affects you.
Yeah,
but
I did the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of us do that, don't we? But I can look back in my childhood, and I do know that, again, we were wealthy people. They knew very, you know, wealthy. They had wealthy friends. My grandfather, as I knew him to be at that time, I took ancestry. They weren't really, I wasn't related to them. But they were much nicer to me than my mother's side of the family. So I, you know, wanted to be more with them. But he was mayor, for God's sake, in Westwood, New Jersey. And he was also one of the best flower growers in the world. And he'd have a lot of flower shows in New York City. See, they were all born in New York on that side. I was born in New York. So I remember good things from that, going into New York City and, you know, being with my grandparents on that side. And he had met movie stars because that was a big deal in those days to go to flower shows. And, you know, I mean, I remember these things. So those were good memories. Okay. And then when I was a teenager, I used to sing in New York City. I loved it. I loved the city. And I made some money. Didn't have to steal my clothes anymore, did I? Okay. So, you know, what a thing to go through. So, I mean, these things happen in life to some people. But I think it's okay, not that it happened, because no one should go through the abuses that we went through. You with the sexual abuse from your father, the terrible mental illnesses that your mother had. My mother was a narcissist, and she was mean as hell. And my father went out to California. They divorced, and she remarried, and the stepfather had no feelings for me. They shouldn't have had children. That's what I'm talking about, titles. Mother, father, brother, sister, aunt, uncle. It doesn't mean anything. So, I mean, I have some good memories. And my mother, even though she didn't believe in God, she loved Christmas. You know why? All the gifts that went back and forth. I would only get a couple. My brother would get thousands, you know what I'm saying? That's an exaggeration, you know what I'm saying? And, so, I mean, there's these things that those of us who have been abused, we grow up and we have to somehow work it out. It's good to get help. It's good to have therapy. In the church that I was a part of, they had social workers there and psychologists because we had over 200 people in that prayer group. So they came from all walks of life. Yeah. And they're the ones that pulled me in from the street. So anyway, the point is I straightened out after that. So something in our life, either we're going to straighten out and become someone who's a good part of society, okay, or we're not. It's as simple as that. And that you just never know which way it's going to be. It's up to you. See, we have to change ourselves. You have in your bio here that you realized that they were mentally ill, especially your mother was mentally ill, and he was mentally ill too.
Yeah, very.
So you can look at that, and you're able to absorb that and say, okay, it wasn't my fault, which it wasn't. You were just a kid. And so therefore, you realize you recognize their mental illness. And I think it's wonderful that you're able to forgive them. Hold on a second. We have two phone calls here. Hold on a second. No, there's actually one because Bill's working. Hold on. 216. 216 area code. Who am I speaking to? Hello? Okay. I'll put you on hold, okay? If you want to speak in, if there's something you want to share, hit the number one, okay? And then I'll bring you on. Okay. Okay, so that's fine. And Philip, his mic is open. Philip, is there something that you'd like to ask her?
Did you get married and is it a healthy relationship?
Sadly, I had three kids from three different fathers, and I was married to one guy who wasn't even their father, but he adopted my oldest son, who is possibly my father's child. And then I had this wonderful marriage when I was 36 to this wonderful man, and we had a child together. A big, huge Catholic wedding, 300 people. It was fantastic, best day of my life. And then after we came back from our honeymoon, which was a cruise ship to Alaska, and we did all these things and all these excursions. We went zip lining and on a helicopter and saw glaciers. It was amazing. But anyways, when we returned, we were out in the country, and we were hit by a drunk driver, and the car spun backwards and rolled into a ditch several times, and our relationship was never the same since. We both suffered brain and nerve damage. Well, he suffered nerve damage, not me. I had some brain issues, and then I found out I was pregnant, and he started becoming very abusive towards me. But not really physically, more mentally abusive. Like he would tell me I couldn't work unless he was at work, and then he would ask me where I was going and only put enough gas into my gas tank to get there and back. And he started withholding money from me, and it was a horrible relationship. And we actually just finally got divorced last October. And I was with him for 16 years, but it was miserable. It took my son becoming 13 and saying, "Mom, when are you going to divorce that bitch? He treats you like shit. Why are you with him?" And I said, "Well, I was waiting till you were older. Are you really okay with me divorcing him?" And he said, "Yes." So I divorced him.
Okay.
But it was horrible. I've never had a good relationship.
I'm glad you divorced him, Philip. I think she should have divorced him too.
I agree, but I kind of felt stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think when men abuse you financially, they have a way to control you, you know. And I felt like I couldn't pay my bills or anything. And here's where I forgave my father. It's because when I filed for divorce, my father, who I hadn't talked to in 10 years, died, and he left me quite a bit of money. And I was able to keep my home and support my child. Well, I heal from this toxic, abusive thing, and I kind of actually forgave my dad because he did this wonderful thing that I didn't expect right when I needed it.
I get that. I get that. Thank you for that, Philip. That was a good question.
Yeah.
Philip, do you have your speaker on your computer?
Yes.
Yeah, turn it off. Because that's that's what the noise is you're hearing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Does it sound like
but anyway,
it's a heater.
Do you have it off? I don't know. Well, she said she has construction going on in the house, too. Maybe that's what I'm hearing. I don't know. I heard something. That's okay. Yeah, I don't hear it now. That was a good question. Thank you for that. thank you for that. I think you're pretty remarkable, though. You know, you see, you've had, I'm looking here. He used to take you dumpster diving, your father.
Yeah.
You know, I know what that's like. With my first
do
husband,
you?
We used to go, oh, yes. We went and we got all our furniture a lot of times because we lived in complexes, okay? And people would leave stuff behind and things that they didn't want. And the kids and I, and we made a big deal out of it. We'd go around the dumpsters and see what we could find. And somehow we didn't feel bad about that. I don't know why. Maybe we should have, but if we didn't, maybe they were just happy to get it. You know what I'm saying? You know. So my son came home one day. I was working as hard as I could. I was working in detox as a counselor, but I have two children to take care of and rent to pay and all the bills that you have. And I really needed a living room table badly. So my son David went to one of the dumpsters, and someone had left behind this, table. And he dragged it home. And I was real happy. You know, so mm-hmm. I get it. Yeah, I get it. I don't know. A lot of people do that, though, because, like, when you have cleanup day, think about it, you know, in your neighborhoods and stuff. We used to do that, too, the cleanup days. And just because my family was wealthy, they didn't give me any money, so I had to fend for myself. So we used to go to cleanup days, and sometimes people would put out really good stuff. My son found a beautiful gold, real gold, too, bracelet. I don't know if it was meant to be there. Maybe she broke up with someone. But, you know, you can find things, all right? So, you know, I don't mind doing that even to this day. We call it junking, okay? And I'm the type of person that I'm not fancy. I'm not into all kinds of stuff because I grew up with wonderful, beautiful, you know, furnishings because they were so wealthy, right? A chandelier. You know, that type of living, maids, on my grandmother's side, on the good grandmother's side, they were so wealthy, all kinds of stuff. Look, if you're not good people or if there's too much fighting in the family, too much abuse, none of that stuff means anything. This is what happens. So we made a game out of it, okay? And I don't do it anymore. Okay, but I didn't seem to mind at the time. But okay, so he had you doing junking or dumpster diving. And then also you became very promiscuous. That's very, very common when, people are abused at home. They become promiscuous. And you know what? That's not just a girl thing. That's where the sex addicts are out there. A lot of times the guys and girls also can become sex addicts. And then you calm down, you know, you say, hey, wait a minute, stop, you know, cut that out, this isn't right. And if you can't, then you have to get help. I mean, you have AA.
Yeah.
You have sex addictions, you know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, you know, it's all out there. And, you know, all the places that I worked, I would do a background study on the people, you know, the clients or the patients, whichever it was. And most of them, I'm not going to say all of them, but most of them came from backgrounds like what we have. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the world is full of a lot of broken people.
Yeah.
And that's why we have something that's called the healing journey. All right. And that's why we say recovery, because we're recovering for what we knew. And also the way sometimes people have to totally change their whole thought process of what's good, what's bad, you know, what's right, what's wrong, the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I like to say, you know, in people. And so you seem to be in a pretty good place today, though. I mean, let me see. A young friend, a teenage Mormon mother, that's who you were talking about. Yeah. How long did you stay with her?
Only like 8 months or a year, a whole school year. And then she was moving, relocating to Utah. Of course, they all derail the Mormons. But she asked if I can go with her, and I wanted to, but my mom wouldn't allow it. And back then, the parents had the right to say yes or no, you can go out of state or can't. And my mom said no. So even though my dad always paid child support, I never got any of that money when I left. And then when she made me come back, as soon as Camille was gone, and back then we didn't have cell phones or pagers or anything. And so once Camille was gone out of state, she kicked me out of the house because we wouldn't stop fighting together. I mean, it was, And then my mom visited me one time when I lived with Camille, and she was a stay-home mom. And she showed up in a suit with nylons and high heels like she was there on a job interview.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
And she
funny.
Would, well, now it's funny. Back then I hated her. But for Christmas, she used to love the fact that I had this one kid that was Jehovah's Witness in my class. And she would say, okay, we're going to make cookies, but they're not Christmas. They're just cookies, because that way she would get permission slips from all the kids. And back then used to do field trips, and they all would walk around the corner and come to my house for Christmas cookies, where my mom had the house decked out for Christmas. She would have like all these Christmas cookies, and she'd try to convert the little child that was Jehovah's Witness to become Christian. She was just a weirdo.
Right.
And then she found, she stalked the kid. She stalked the kid and found out where the kid lived, and she made us go Christmas caroling at their house.
Oh, my God.
She was just a weirdo.
Yeah, that's strange. That's strange.
Yeah. And as an adult, you know, when I was making a lot of money in real estate, I used to have this contact with getting discounted appliances through being a real estate broker. And my stepfather and my mother used that discount to buy new appliances for their kitchen. But they had this ugly old microwave that was white. So for Christmas one year, I showed up and I told her I was coming, and I brought her the matching stainless steel microwave. You know, like, this is a Christmas gift, you know, Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there with my kids, three kids, and there was presents all over the family room. Christmas lights, everything. She always really did up for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids were digging for their presents, and she got so mad, and she pulled me aside and she said, how dare you get me such a lavish gift for Christmas? I didn't get you guys anything. And I go, well, why are there all these gifts under your tree? Well, they were for this girl she took under her wing named Precious that she used to spoil rotten. It was for her and her family that were coming over later for dinner. And so she went in the back of the house, got this ugly thing she got from a thrift store. It said $2.99 on the bottom still. And she goes, here, this is your family gift. And my husband at the time was so pissed off that we left. But that's just how my mom thought of us. You know, like, she just didn't, she just never thought of us. I've never had a wrapped Christmas gift from my mom, except for the one year when I lived with Camille. She brought me something used from a thrift store, which was fine, but that was the only time I ever got a wrapped gift.
Well, you see, that's sad, okay? I had things like that happen in my life, too. And whereas my brother would get lavished. I mean, he got his first car when he was 13 years old.
Jeez.
13. And it was a Kaiser. It was so ugly. I don't know if you've ever seen a Kaiser before. It's a nasty-looking car, trust me. Like,
I never even heard of that.
It's a German car. And for some reason, I don't know, he thought he liked this car. But you see, my stepfather was afraid of him, and my brother was one of my abusers, okay, sexual abusers.
Oh, yeah.
Mother didn't care. Yeah. And, but he was a tall, lanky kid, and my stepfather was afraid to, well, really was afraid to fight with him because I think he thought he'd lose, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my mother adored him for some reason. I don't know why. He's a pervert. See, once a pervert, always a pervert. I may have been his sister.
Yeah.
But
it's in their head.
Half-sister. It's in their head. You can't change them. You cannot.
No.
All the studies,
no.
They've for decades now, they've been working on that. And they haven't come up with an answer yet. Okay? And at one time they thought if they could get, like, a teenager, that there might be some hope. But I don't think that's even come through anymore because you know, you either are or you're not. That's the way it is, okay? And that's unfortunate. There is no help from what I know of anyway. I've never been told any different. So you know, we have these things in our lives that we can look back on that are nasty. But then we have to realize,
yeah,
too, okay, the person is mentally ill. I believe my mother was,
yeah,
mentally ill. She told,
I agree,
me she was a witch. She was a witch. That's what she,
mm-hmm,
told me. And she had this nasty look that would melt me. If she was mad at me, honey, she would give me this look, and I would melt. Okay, I was so afraid of her.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother had that look, and her mother had that look. It was like the three of them.
Wow.
And let me tell you something. I didn't like any of them, and my friends, I'd have them come around the house, and my grandparents, they were living with us at the time. Oh, glory be. They're supposed to be there 7 months. They ended up being there 7 years. Now, this I will tell you because I think it's funny. So they saw how they treated me, and we were standing out in the driveway one night. We always owned lots of properties, the places that my mother and stepfather even bought. So it was a long driveway. And we were standing by the house, though, and my grandmother was looking outside, looking through the window. You could see her looking, because she wants to squeal on us, you know, to my mother. Oh, look what,
mm-hmm,
they're doing. Well, they all mooned her. So with her standing there, they pulled their pants down, and they mooned her, and that was the end of that.
Oh.
She never did that again.
Wow.
Now, look, I have a wild sense of humor, I admit it, but I think that was funny, okay?
That
because,
is funny.
You see, there was so much discord, so much hatred, so much frustration, so much anger in the house, and I was the one that was the black sheep, so they was always trying to get me in trouble, my grandparents too. And so when they mooned them, I was happy. I was glad they did it. So now I can look back at that, and I think it's funny. There was five of them. So anyway, that was a funny story. But I can look back at, I can see, because you asked, can you find something in your life? Well, I can put that on my list. Okay, that was funny, all right? So, but I can look back at some things that in my life that were good, you know, and I do have that, and I hold on to those memories. Because at one time, all I did was hold on to the horror in the family. I could tell you stories that would curl your hair, all right? So I held,
yeah,
on to, you know, I held on to that. And as long as people do that, and you use another word, you use the word stuck, well, a lot of us, if we don't move forward, we then become stuck. And I get these calls,
yes,
like I said, in the AM, and many of those people are stuck. And it's very hard to get them out of that mindset. Well, look what happened to me, you know, and all this other stuff. Well, it happens to a lot of people. I have to tell them that.
Yeah.
And they don't like that, okay, because they want to feel their own pain, okay? It's like they stuck into this mindset. People are not going to heal if they don't try to move forward. And they certainly should get a counselor or a therapist, some kind of psychiatric treatment, depending on how, you know,
yes,
severe their problems are, and move forward. Otherwise, you live a miserable life.
But you can't
life.
Get past it until you talk about it, until you put it out there, until you understand it and focus on why and what happened and how, you know, you didn't do anything wrong and
that's,
you know,
right,
it was the other,
that's
person,
right,
and until you do that, you can't move on. And you know, I personally didn't know how to get over it, and
mm-hmm,
until I wrote it all out, you know, I just wrote this gross, disgusting book, you know. It was really sick, actually. I look at it and I can't even believe I wrote it. It's like humiliating, but at the same time, it was so healing. Like, I remember when I was done and I got my first box of books, my pores and my skin I just sweat everywhere. I like all this, like, depression, anxiety, everything just was so released from me that day. It was like, I'm free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you see, yeah. Now,
then I went on Dr. Phil.
Yeah, I know. You told me about that. My God.
I know.
You told us about that. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Well, by the way,
I
that was crazy. I don't know. I think I would have walked off the stage and thumbed my nose at him because I'm fresh. Now, here's
No,
the,
because I was still waiting for the intervention.
Oh,
like,
God.
I was sitting there on the stage, and Dr. Phil has this little headphone piece in his ear, and the producers tell him exactly what to say. And so it was very confusing for me because he was very nice, very supportive to me, understood what I said, understood what I did, and then he would say these bizarre off-the-wall things. Well, they edited out all the support and good, kind, wonderful things he said to me and only played the stuff the producers told them to play because it was he's an actor. And it was just shocking to me when I watched the show. I was like, no, no, no. You know, there was some of that, but not really. I mean, they put my voice in places I didn't even talk in that during that time. And they edited out a lot of stuff that I did say. And so a lot of people are like, why didn't you speak up? Why didn't you, you know, whatever. And it's like, I did. You know, I really did.
Well, it's kind of hard, too, though. I mean, did you have a full audience? The 216 area code. I see you had your hand up. And I'm going to call on you in a second. But let me ask you something. All right. Now, you said you tried to speak up, like, where's this help and all this other stuff? I want to talk about this. We were supposed to cover this, cover that. And, God's sake. I would have been
They would turn off my microphone and go to commercial.
Oh, for God's sake. Oh, my God. I would have stood up and did a dance. I would have fixed them.
Well,
see, stuff like that makes
I was waiting
mad.
For the intervention.
Right. I would have been an intervention after that one. All right. Well, let me get to 216 because they have been sitting by and standing up here, and now they want to speak. 216 area code, who am I speaking to?
Oh, hi. I just thought if you ever wanted to say anything, you press 1.
Okay, well, were you just listening or something? It doesn't matter. Are you listening? Is that what you want to do?
I'm listening, and then I, you know, want to say some things from time to time. So do I press 1 each time?
You can. This is a talk show, honey. You can talk right now. If you have a question, if you want to speak to Jory, you have a question. Or you want to make a comment, you know, you're a part of the show. You're on the panel. Yes, you are. You're on the panel. So do you want to ask a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say when he was talking, like, about writing. I'm not much of a writer, but I'm getting ready to do that. I'd rather not say my name right now, but...
It's okay.
Anyway, see, for me, with the healing, you talk about getting stuck and staying stuck. I'm very much stuck, but the way that I heal is to talk things out and get it said to the rightful person or place or entity. But that's how I heal. That's how I heal. So I'm trying to find out if that's what works for me. Then where do you go if you want to, okay, you're trying to heal, you're trying to move forward. How do you heal when you've got all those feelings that you felt that you want to deal with, but you don't know where to go with the feelings? That makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Jory, do you want to answer that?
I'm texting.
I'm kind of confused by the question.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying, so then we can handle it together. And Philip, you can say something too. When you're stuck, okay, I understand what you're doing. You have all those feelings. I had all feelings of hatred.
Yeah.
Right, for so long, and I've said this on air before. I was alone in the house. I'd make sure I was alone in the house. And I would go around in circles. I hate this one. I hate that one out loud. And I want to twist your head like the Exorcist. I want to do this. I want to do that. You know what I'm saying? And finally, I got so tired of all the hatred. I actually fell to the floor from exhaustion. Because when you have all that hatred inside of you, it can exhaust you, okay? Now, what I'm suggesting to you is if you want to write a book, if that's what you're talking about, or whatever you want to do with that, I'm not going to say that you have to forgive people, all right, Jory? I don't actually forgive the people that, did these things to me. You don't know my story. and it's just as bad as yours. I mean, we don't take yardsticks on the show anyway. It's trauma. But
yeah.
what I can do is say that those people too were not mentally sound, and I'm okay. I'm still standing. Okay. So with
yes.
all the feelings that you have and all the things that you went through, okay, you can look at
mm-hmm.
it in the sense that, well, this person did this to me, that person did that to me, and all these other things that you have going around, floating around in your head, and say it sucked. You can get mad at it, okay? It sucked, but you know what? I'm still here, and I'm going to write about it, and I'm going to feel good about writing about it because, you see, I was just a kid, and were you just a child when you were going through all your things?
Who are you asking?
Yes, I can't hear you, honey. Yes?
Hey, who are you addressing?
Okay.
Me, the caller, or Jory?
No, I'm talking to you.
Oh,
were you
okay.
just a kid when all those things, you know, happened to you?
Some of it. A lot mm-hmm. of it teenage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it in elementary school.
Yeah.
And then the best way that I could describe it is it was like a lot of latent abuse, or how do I say it? Sorry, I'm not well-versed, but...
just say it how it is.
Yeah.
Because I knew... okay, sorry. Because I knew, like, pretty decent life, so to speak, I was never able to address the things that were bothering me. So I'd have to say, regarding my mom, I was ignored or neglected in some ways as far as
mm-hmm.
what was bothering me. So I had to be appropriate, blah, 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 blah. And I was never able to just, I held things in a lot because the first thing that I remember was, you know, don't talk about it. Don't you dare tell anybody what goes on here at the house. It wasn't horrific, but it was horrific to me. So,
well, you
know,
I have something.
Something.
I have
ahead,
something
Julie.
To say when you're done.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, let me tell you. I thought that these things would never happen to my children because I felt like, okay, I know the signs, I know what to look for and everything else. But I made a mistake with my oldest son, and I let a teenage babysitter babysit him. He was an older high school student. And I thought it would be good for my son to have, like, you know, an older brother type figure in his family and stuff. And he loved this guy. The guy would take him, you know, different places and play with him and, you know, play video games with him and everything. And then all of a sudden, one day, my son stopped wanting him to babysit. And I didn't understand it. I was like, this guy is so nice and he's so helpful and he doesn't charge me a whole lot and blah, blah, blah. Well, my son told me, well, he makes me suck his penis. Sorry, I'm just going to say it the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I completely freaked out. I didn't believe my son at first. I didn't really think boys could be molested. I really never thought about it. I was just really in shock. This guy was so nice and everything. And then my son was only 6. And after I let go of this guy named Danny as a babysitter, one day my son was going to the bathroom and he was screaming in pain and he had bubble blisters all over his penis. And mind you, this is in the 1995 or something. And I took him to the emergency room and found out he had herpes. And that's how I found out for sure my son was being sexually abused. So I went through the whole court system and everything and got the kid in all this trouble. I don't know. I found out he was sexually abused and he had a horrible life too. But I had told my son never to talk about it, never to think about it. We're going to pretend it never happened. And we actually, I married this guy who was my, well, he was my boyfriend, but he was also gay. It was kind of confusing, but he was really nice. And I married him to move to Manteca, and he adopted my son Ryan so that we could change his last name so this guy would never find him. And we moved to Manteca and California, and my son would go to school, and he was not the happiest kid. I never really knew what was wrong until one day he came home, went in his room, and I was outside gardening, and a big group of kids came walking up down the street. And they said, "Is Pika home?" Because that was his adopted name. And I said, "Yeah." And then they said, that "We want to talk to him." So my son Ryan came out of the house, and he went for a little walk with them, came back, and I said, "What was that about?" And he goes, "They wanted to know if I was gay." And I said, "Why would they ask you if you were gay?" And he goes, "Oh, well, because today at school, we had this thing where people came on the stage and talked about sexual abuse. And then they asked if anyone wanted to share their story. So I went on the stage and told everybody what happened to me with this guy, Danny, the babysitter." And I freaked out. I thought, holy shit, we moved here to escape that. We weren't supposed to talk about it again. I thought we were going to have to relocate again because my kid was going to get tormented and teased and that he wouldn't be able to go to school anymore. We'd have to change schools and everything. I was freaked out and completely angry at him. I mean, we're not supposed to talk about it. It didn't happen. You know, it's over in the past, whatever, get over it. Well, here's the thing that happened. He insisted on going to school. And do you know that after that day, he became an honor roll student. He became captain of the football team. He became so extremely popular. He's so successful in life now. He's 30, I don't remember, 35. And he is sells artificial intelligence, and he's super wealthy and lives in San Diego really well. And he's okay, but he went on stage and told the whole school. That was healing. That was what we need to teach people who are sexually abused to do. We need to tell them it's not your problem. You do not have to sit there and be shamed and be silent. You go out there and you go on the stage and you say, "Hey, this happened to me." And guess what? All these kids were coming up to him saying, "It happened to me. It happened to me. It happened to me." And he used to have kids come to the house and he'd counsel them. And
see, that's
and I can't tell you how many kids he saved that day. And one kid had said, "Well, my stepfather got me pregnant, and my mom made me put the baby up for adoption, and she doesn't believe that it was him that got me pregnant." Mm-hmm. Well, we believe you, you know, and it just changed things in the community we were in. And everybody was accepting and understanding. And people realize they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's it. That's a wonderful story. What do you think about that? I'm going to just call you 216. Okay. What do you think about that?
The abuse that was at home, at the house, was mental, psychological. It was not sexual at the house. However, when I was 9 and then when I was like between 10 and 12, there was some sexual abuse outside of the home by a neighborhood kid and then by uncle/cousin, because my mom's the youngest of 10. So, and my dad's in the middle of 7. They had me in their 40s. Suffice it to say. My first cousins were like at least 25 years or more older than me. So I just, because I was born into the second cousin generation, whenever my second cousins would be saying, "Hey, aunt so-and-so, uncle, aunt, uncle." Because I was a little kid, they were my aunt and uncle too. I didn't know the thing about cousins and first cousins and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So my uncle, who actually was a cousin, but I called him my uncle, I started getting molested by him.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, to this day, I've talked to a counselor, and I forgave him on his deathbed. He was in a coma, and I knew he heard me because I remember how he grimaced. I remember how he reacted when I told him who I was and, you know, what about Uncle Johnny, who's my dad, and he, like, he reacted. I don't know if that makes time I was
I think
around.
That's awesome that you did that. Good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a coma. I never was around that, but he was jaundiced, and he was in a coma. And I believe I was about 33, 34 at the time. And I told him that I forgave him. I always wanted to ask. Yes. I always wanted to ask him, why did he do that to me? Because I was in
a... Because he's a horny pig. And he has mental problems.
Well, you know, I'm hearing all this, and what did he say? Why did I? When you said to him, "Why did you do this?" What did he say to you?
No, I said I wanted to. By the time
you wanted to. Okay. I thought you said you did. All right, go ahead.
You know,
yeah,
we
yeah.
can't answer why these people do these things. I think that there's people who have like a chemical imbalance in their brain, and they just can't. Mm-hmm. They don't know right from wrong, and they just. Are idiots, you know, and they're abusive, and they don't think they're doing anything wrong. I don't think my mom or my dad thought they were doing anything wrong. I think my dad thought he was doing it because he loved me. People always say that it's a control thing. I never felt like that with my dad. I always felt like with my dad, it was just something we did. And, you know, it was no big deal. It would be over quick. Just stare at the little clock on the headboard. And it would be over, you know. and I just don't think that, I don't know if they really realize they're doing anything wrong. I think they're sick in the head.
I think there's mental illness, of course. But on the other hand, there's a lot of, like with the psychopaths, okay, they're very mentally ill. They would be a psychopath. However, they have no feeling. They have no empathy. They don't care. You mm-hmm. see, that's what they do. Whether it be with murder or whether it's in a sex ring or whatever it is that they're involved with, they don't care because it's for self-gratification, okay? And that's all they care about. And that's their illness right there is because they have no empathy.
Well, my sister-in-law asked – oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, in her case, okay, in 216, these things happen in families, and it's disgusting. All right, with first cousins, second cousins, and third cousins, they say, oh, well, that's too far apart, so it's not really a relative. But on the other hand, that's why we have so many problems in our families, you know, because there is so much sexual abuse going on. And you might have said something to him, you know, you might have said, hey, how come you did that? And he probably might say to you, oh, you enjoyed it.
That's what I was just going to say. I was just going to say that my sister-in-law asked my father-in-law why he did what he did to me. And he said to her, it was because I led him on and that I wanted him to do that. And
they
here's the thing. My father-in-law, my father-in-law was 30 years older than me, and he seriously looked like Shrek. He was the ugliest guy, and I'm a good-looking woman. I mean, I'm not just trying to toot my own horn, but I am. And there is no way in hell I ever wanted that gross pig to do that to me. No way. But in his head, because he's so sick, he thought I did.
Well, you just said it right there, though. He's so sick, okay?
Yes.
Of course, when people are pedophiles or, you know, then they go to the next classification, which I think is called hebephilia or hebephilia, for the teenagers. And then there's one also for infants. How gross. I have it written down. It's up on my bulletin board, and I'm not going to dig. Okay. I need a secretary. But anyway, there's like three classifications. They don't care what they do, okay? They don't care.
They don't.
They have no empathy. Their main goal is to just simply do what they want to do sexually and get off. And there is a control issue there. Because, you see, this is why, especially like with the pedophiles, all right, they know that they're not going to be able to fight back. They don't care if they're ruining that child's mental, spiritual, physical, emotional. They don't care about that stuff. All they care about is their next prey, and that's P-R-E-Y. And by the time, you know, they get done, they get caught, they have, for God's sake, they have, you know, hurt many, many, many children. They've abused many children. In fact, with the first-time offenders, if they do get caught, okay, they have, this is what the stats say even today, they agree on this, they've abused maybe around 128 times, but that could be 5 times with one kid, 10 times with another. You do the math, it doesn't matter. It's 128 assaults, okay? And that's first-time abusers, offenders. I think they should throw them in jail, and because it's only the first time, oh, no, honey, they shouldn't get maybe 2 years or a year and a half or whatever. They should go to jail for a long time. That's what they
should
do.
Dr. Phil told me, which wasn't aired, it was edited out, he said, you can ask your dad or whoever to apologize, but they won't know what they did wrong. They don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what they did wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, they do know. Okay, he's wrong there. And I'm going to say he's wrong there because I used to work psych units and all kinds of stuff, and we had pedophiles in there. All right.
Well, you know, Dr. Phil, him and his PhD, big deal, right?
Yeah, I've heard about that too.
I mean, look what kind of person he is. He's scandalous, you know. I mean,
well, that's why he has to wear everything in his ear because he needs people to tell him the right answers. I know that he doesn't have the right answers on his own.
No.
Maybe over the years he's learned because he's done this for so long, all right? That can happen too, but still no, he needs help. So he needs help from the specialists right there, the experts right there in his audience. But what I'm trying to get at is these people are so mentally ill, okay? They don't care what they're doing, and they're all they care about is themselves and self-gratification. And, you know, and that's why I think they should throw the book at the first-time offenders because they're never going to stop. Okay?
No, yeah, I agree.
You know, and again, they've done studies on this. We used to talk about it in the classes that I took. They've done studies on it. And if they've done it for decades back then, I mean, I've been out of school now for a while. I don't need any more school and don't even want it. But the point is this. I know what I was taught then. So if it was decades then, well, how long much more do they have to study? You know what I'm saying? Nothing has happened. Nothing has changed. So put them the hell in jail. Put them in there and keep them off the streets because they're a menace to society. They're a menace to children. And they ruin children's
And I'd like
lives.
To add something.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say to our friend on that just spoke to us that
yeah,
she's
right there.
I think that if she was to come out and say so-and-so did this to her, it would not surprise me at all if she had other relatives that said, oh, shit, he did that to me too. It's so common.
You know,
common. And everyone's afraid to say it.
Right.
I have wanted to ask, okay, sorry if I seem a little slow. I'm not. It's just, it's emotional for me. It is.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's okay.
I know.
I was not abused by him or anything like that. But, you know, there again, I used to freeze at home with my parents arguing. I used to freeze. I guess I just freeze hot from being little, from the emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
The bull that my mom would say to me, the threats that she would make to me, the... you know, it might not be as much of abuse as some other people or as serious, but
it was trauma to you.
It was trauma.
I don't think there's any kind of contest. I think that it's all traumatic. If someone asked me once, well, whose is worse? I said, it's all bad. What are you talking about? There's no contest. I mean, I don't think mine was as bad as yours. And she said, well, I didn't think mine was as bad as yours. It was interesting because we both felt that way when I was talking to this lady. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's so true, Jory. That's true. That's helping her. You see, you have to understand, like I just said before, we don't take a measuring stick. Whatever trauma is trauma, okay?
Right.
So you have to get your thoughts together so that you can, you know, if you're thinking about writing a book, if you are, You have to get your thoughts together at an earliest time when you felt like there was emotional abuse. Let me tell you something quickly about domestic violence. Now, I've spoken about this before, but I'm going to speak about it again because you're here and it's important, okay? They have come to the conclusion that if a child is watching domestic violence, maybe it's not slapping, hitting, blood flying like I saw, it doesn't matter, but maybe there's all this emotional, thing going on with the verbal abuse and all that other stuff. It's the same type, now this is going to blow your mind, it's the same type that if you were standing next to a soldier in war and he sees his buddy get his head blown off, a little girl or a little boy who is standing there watching the mother who's supposed to nurture them and the father, you know, with all this fighting going on, you said you stood frozen. So did I. I can relate to that.
Me too.
I was like a statue, okay? I couldn't move. Yeah. It affects everybody everywhere. You have to fight, the fright, and the flee, and all this other stuff. Yeah, my computer just did something weird. Go ahead.
Funny to me or strange thing to me is, and actually a lot of this stuff is coming back to haunt me lately in just like a few days, even like as late as a few days ago, okay? Whenever I would be, say, put in a, well, what's normal, right? But just say a normal setting, like say as a kid, okay, like I said, you got to understand my family dynamics. My cousins who are my age, their mom is actually my first cousin, but I call her auntie, you know, auntie Teresa, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I knew my one aunt since something wasn't right, but nobody ever really like stepped in. But this one aunt took very special measures to invite me over. She didn't drive, but my dad and mom would take me over to come and spend the night with Linda, Lori, and Leanne. I was born in between these girls. So there's like my second cousin, okay, Linda, then me, then Lori, then Leanne. So you really can't tell when you're the same age, a little kid there, and then this woman is married and has children. It's hard to understand. This is your cousin, not your aunt, but that's okay. But she always did special things, like she'd come around Easter for my birthday, and she'd bring me like maybe at Easter, a chocolate cross made out of like Milky Ways or something. I think she knew it wasn't right at home, but she didn't want to stir the pot. So God bless her for always treating me decent and taking me under her wing to a point. Well,
okay,
I
want to say something here, honey. I really don't like interrupting you, but we only have like 2 minutes left to the show, okay? So,
oh, I want to say something. I want her to be a guest, and I want to log in.
Yeah, well, I do too. Hold on a second, Jory. What I want you to do is before she becomes a guest, she has to get her thoughts together. Now, look, you're having, like, what you're doing, you're putting the puzzle together, okay, of your childhood and your life, and this is good. Write things down. As things come to you, write things down. And then there goes my 90-second cue. The show is actually over. Oh, my God. And I couldn't even get the Bill. And Bill, I think, wanted to say hello. But he says he's working, too. All right. All I can say to you is, Jory, it was a pleasure having you on the phone, on the show. And you wrote the book Chocolate Flowers, and I think people should, look that up. It's on Amazon, correct?
No. I pulled it. You can get it for 99 cents on Kindle.
Okay, we'll talk about that another time because I only have 60 seconds left here. But I'm glad that Philip called in. Jory, I'm glad that you were here. And 216, I want you to listen to the shows, okay? And I want you to start writing things down as you remember them. And then you'll have a better idea, and you'll learn how to handle certain situations, all right? And you can call me. I'm the night owl, okay, anytime on the contact page. I'm number one or maybe number two on the contact page. I think I'm number one on NASCA, NASCA.org website to see contact.
Yeah, you know me. I just don't want to.
And I can talk to you. Yeah. So you have.
I just don't want to say my name.
That's okay.
Huh?
You know what I want you to do? I want you to tell Bill that we know he's not working and that he's just sleeping and snoring away.
No, he's not. He's working.
That or whatever.
He'll go. But anyway, okay, listen. The show is, that's funny. The show is over. And 216
okay.
Area code, do as I said, and call me if you need to talk to someone.
And if you
want to
look me up on Facebook and ever talk, it's Jori Nunes, JORINUNES. And I would be more than happy to talk with you.
Okay, that's good. Now, I have to wrap the show up now. Thank you so much for coming on. Okay,
thank
good
you.
Night. God bless.
Thank
all right,
you.
Good night now.
Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.